You're listening to Control Talk Now, the Smart Buildings Podcast.
With the man, the myth, the legend. The legend. Ken Smyers and Eric Stromquist.
Control Talk Now, the weekly podcast with building automation and smart building control news you can use.
Now, here's Eric.
All right. Hi, welcome to episode 301 of Control Talk Now, the Smart Buildings videocast and podcast for the week ending February the 3rd. Did I get that right, Kenny?
That's right.
It's Super Bowl
Sunday. The day after today's Groundhog Day and tomorrow's Super Bowl Sunday, baby.
Well, there you go. But don't mess up my intro here, buddy, because I am joined by your co-host and mine, the man, the myth, the legend, who is being very disruptive today.
Exactly.
Kenny Smyers, the controls man from Pittsburgh. And it's very appropriate you're being disruptive because the theme of this week's show is going to be disruption. Is it
That's right.
A bad thing?
Well, remember that song, Ball of Confusion? This reminds me of Ball of Disruption, or the path of least disruption. That's our journey. We're all individually trekking down the path of least disruption. So you're right. Oh, yeah. We got some great components of disruption to talk about on the show.
Yeah, we do. We got basically a couple phases here. We'll be bringing some guests on here in just a few minutes. Before we do, a special thanks to everybody that wished us well for episode 300 of Control Talk Now, the Smart Buildings videocast and podcast. And a special thanks to the folks that sent us the congratulatory videos that we got up. We got most of them up. There were a couple that we got too late to actually get on, but we appreciate that. And especially the most exciting, serious man in the controls industry, Roger Rebenek, and the team from Jackson Controls. That was just an awesome, awesome video. So we're starting on a new era here, Kenny. We're going to get our next 100 done. So talk to me, buddy. Talk to me. Anything going on before we get into the meat of this episode?
No, I was really excited about some of the things that have happened this week. We're going to go into the Ken St. Clair February edition of Automated Buildings, but we have got some really good commentary coming regarding disruption being a very positive thing. In other words, the word disruption, I think, immediately connotates a bad, not good. Disrupting. You're changing the norm and you're making things difficult for people and you're moving me out of my sweet spot. Remember the book, Who Took My Cheese or Who Moved My Cheese or whatever? And it was really a simplified version of, life is going to make you go through changes. And whenever you resist change, that's where you begin to feel the discomfort. We have lined up some really good stuff about disruption that actually presents it in a very positive manner.
Well, it does. And again, we've mentioned on the show before, one of my teachers used to say there are two types of change. There's cyclical change and there's structural change. And the cyclical change is like the stock market. It goes up, it goes down. Fashion is a cyclical change. The ties get skinny, the ties get fat. The skirts get long, the skirts get short. And your strategy in a cyclical change is to just time the change. Buy low, sell high, for example, in the stock market. With a disruptive change, and as my teacher used to say, once the Model T came out, the Ford automobile came out, it didn't matter how good of a horse and buggy you had, you were done. It was just a matter of time. So during a structural change, your strategy is adapt or die. Now, we've got a lot of disruption going on, Kenny. I'm not sure whether it's cyclical or structural. My guess is it's more structural than cyclical, meaning that I don't think we're going to go backwards. Once we got the mobile phone, we're not going backwards. What are your thoughts on that?
Oh, I certainly agree with you. And in fact, that was one of the analogies that we're going to hear here shortly, that when you go into, we had this incredible barrage of technology, 5G, artificial intelligence, blockchain, augmented reality, virtual reality, voice activation, video sensing, but the reality was that once the phone went from being a flip phone to a phone with a monitor, a microphone, a video camera, and whatever, you can't go back. It just doesn't make sense, and then people aren't going to make them anymore. So, and then we've seen that there's been a global shortage of components or whatever. So the people that make these things that make up the technology or that house and facilitate and the footprint of technology, they're not available anymore. It's because they're going into a faster, better, whatever. The system on a chip is getting smaller and smaller, so the footprints are changing. changing, and therefore the things that we use, the tools we use, will constantly change. So I think they're structural changes versus cyclical changes in our world.
Right. And I think the positiveness is the same teacher was, he actually, Edwards Deming, the guy that brought quality back to the United States. So this gentleman I studied with actually was one of the guys that went in with Deming to introduce the whole quality movement at Ford Motor Company back when Don Peterson started it. And he was the guy that was talking about cyclical versus structural. Well, I didn't see him for about 15 years. He did a deep dive, like 10 years on networks and everything from terror networks to cell networks in your body and how that works. And he came out with the rules changed with networks. In other words, back in the old model, supply and demand, it was power versus power. I mean, you know, your thing was based on a scarcity model, right? You know, I had to take yours to get more. And I think with the network economy, this might be the actual structural change that I'm thinking about here. With the network economy, the rules are completely different. There is no scarcity. Givers get, the more you put in, the pie gets bigger and bigger. And I think that's where we're at. And I think trying to understand where we're at through the model of scarcity, meaning I got to take your pie to have more, versus network, which is, hey, the more you put in, the bigger the pie gets and the more there is for everybody. I think that maybe that's where we're at. And I think that might be one of the biggest forms of disruption, because so much of how we think and act is based on there's not enough.
Well, you know, I mean, that's really cool. And you know, because I've always registered that form of economics through mercantilism. In other words, there was a pie, there was a market, and it was this big. And the only way to increase my slice of the pie was to take some of yours, right, or whatever. Then you had these gargantuan giants, the cola wars, that said, you know what, instead of fighting each other, we enter this co-opetition, where you go your way, I go my way, and we increase the market overall. Yeah. They went around the world, and both of them had extraordinary growth, and neither, you know, at the sake of neither's market. So that you're absolutely right, and I think we're there. And to the point where we were offline talking about, you know, the progress we're making and some of the adoption rates, you know, different technologies are adopted at different rates of you know, acceptability, and how that's driven by, you know, business models, and people have to make money, and there's only a, you know, so much a generation can handle as far as moving out of their sweet spot, learning new technologies and adopting it, and so you have a lot of headwinds and people holding on for the longest possible moment, but then they jeopardize the facilities that they're managing and whatever. So you have these 80% of our market out there, or the buildings out there, according to the Department of Energy, need to have that structural change you're talking about, where we make that building, however big it is, intelligent, so that we can get it to the grid, so that when we will be talking about these energy issues that we have, we're not making any more generation plants. We're not generating any more. I mean, we're not building a new power plant. So the ones that we have to suffice. And the only way that's going to work is if we make each and every building intelligent and connected, and there lies in the rub, but also the opportunity. So the disruption that we're talking about is applying the technology into the square peg of, no, we don't need it. We've got 40 years here without using it. We don't need it now. But you'll see the government start coming down with, you know, both the carrot and the rod, saying, you know, well, here's a rebate, or here's consequences. You're going to pay more if you're a liability. And then you've got this fabulous technology that we'll talk about, where, hey, you can now manage your risk. So these people now taking all the options out there and work with partners that can handle it, master systems integrators and systems integrators in your local area, can now adopt the disruptive technology and make that transformative change within their own building.
Well, let's bring on our first guest, Nostradamus Sinclair, and his February issue is all about disruption, and can't wait to have him on. So Kenny, how about introducing Ken real quick?
I'd love to. The one and only Ken St. Clair, owner, editor of automatedbuildings.com. We're going to discuss the February 2019 editorial theme, The Dawn of Disruption. I mean, that sounds like a major Hollywood hit at the, you know, Hollywood, The Dawn of Disruption. Ken, welcome to the show.
Welcome to the show, Ken.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, you bet. It's so glad. What a great, great, great episode. I say episode, I think of all your these shows as episodes, because we're talking about your fantastic publication, and this month did not disappoint. Let's start by, you had a great definition of the difference between innovation and disruption.
Yeah, well basically innovation is taking something that's we're doing and making it better. But disruption is just doing it in a completely different way that obsoletes what we were doing. And I think we've seen that in a lot of things that have been falling on us lately. The disruption, we can't really totally disrupt buildings because they're kind of monoliths that are going to be there for a while. So our disruption, we need to embrace disruption, but then try to figure out how to elegantly and mindfully build a bridge to the realities that we face every day, I think. So I think I'm really pleased with the article as well. I'm always amazed when I'm putting together these issues, the stuff that comes in at the last moment, how it changes the whole flavor of the issue. And Sudan from Stanford writing about the electric vehicle, bringing the power from the renewable side of the equation and bringing it to the building kind of blindsided me. And it's like, oh, wow, that's pretty significant. And then at the same time, just shortly before that article, I got the article from a fellow we haven't heard from for a while, Leighton Wolf. And Leighton, of course, has been always following the utility side of the equation, basically the grid. And he's talking about the disruption renewables are putting on the grid and how we're starting to get these demand episodes where we see in California we're paying up to $1.32 a kilowatt. Can you imagine that during a disrupted period? So that kind of dovetails in with the first disruptions. And then Scott Cochran comes up, beam me up, Scotty, comes into the fray, and he talks about how come our buildings are so dumb. And we're the guys that are trying to make them a little smarter, but we need to be more disruptive in our approach. So yeah, it kind of all started snowballing. And as usual, never know exactly what I'm talking about, but the people that I publish do.
Well, Anton had Anton had a really interesting sort of take on why people resist disruption and also where it comes about. And one of his statements that sort of stood out to me is that if you really look at why disruption happened, it typically happens out of necessity of some type, and understanding what the necessity is might allow you to embrace it a little bit easier.
I believe that as well. I believe, also strongly believe, that what we need to do, and I've been on this, beating on this bandwagon for a while, is we have to embrace our younger mentors. We have to view this whole disruption through their eyes, the digital natives. We need to understand and think like digital natives. We're not. It's a strange land for us. We have to learn what they know. They don't see it as disruption. They just see it as business as usual. And wow, isn't that neat? Isn't that a great way of doing it, much better than we used to? And so they just grab that piece, and they grab three or four pieces of disruption and put them together and are even more disruptive. And they don't even realize they're being disruptive. They're just doing it the way they're going to do it. So
digital natives. Yeah. Man, who would have thought we've been aliens in our own world, right?
No, but you know what? Your point. My daughter just went back to California, and we were talking about the going away party sort of thing. We had a baptism, and it had a really nice, you know, event. And I run to get a piece of paper and a pencil and start writing down our shopping list. And she goes, "What are you doing?" She goes, "First of all, you could have used your phone." So she goes, you know, she starts talking into her phone, and it converts it into a shopping list. Then she said, "And you got, hey, Google sitting here. All you got to do is say, hey, Google, create a shopping list, you know, milk, bread, eggs, whatever." So my whole digital thing that you just said here really hit home again, because you're right. My first impulse is to go analog and to write things down and then, you know, and then need a piece of paper to go, to be intelligent enough to go shopping. And now that's just wrong. So now I'm getting in the habit of talking into my phone and getting over that little bit of queasy, uncomfortable. Was anybody listening to me talking to my phone? But now it's normal to talk to your phone. It's normal to voice activate your phone and create your list. To your point.
Yeah, I think you just did that on my Google. So I now have your grocery list on my Google. So yeah, I get it. I get it.
You should have seen Kenny. That.
Here we go. Yeah, we proved that works. If you say, hey, Google, everybody there's a hey, Google in the neighborhood starting to pick that up.
That's right. You got it.
In fact, somebody said that they did a big test on that on television to prove it or whatever. And it's extraordinary. But that's that digital world that we have to reattach ourselves to and become more familiar and better players. Because to Scotty Cochran's point about why are buildings so dumb, I thought that was excellent. You know, the three things he says that you got to do now, you know, what am I doing? Who are the players and why am I doing it? You know, so I think we're, again, the February edition, I think delivers the content that you went to the AHR Expo, you came home and, you know, we said that you know, Ken St. Clair, owner editor of Automated Buildings, believes that the time has come for us to prepare and build elegant, mindful bridges between the throes of disruption, the limits of innovation, and the inevitability of a new reality. And so, you know, that's a pretty heady thing. But then the content delivered it. I mean, if you go through the articles that are additional reads to the February edition of Automated Buildings, I mean, that content is worth time well spent. Because it will give you the cliff notes on what this disruption is, how it's manifesting in our worlds. We don't recognize it as disruption, but it's truly disruptive. It's changing the way that we're doing business. And I think the single greatest headwind, to your points, is money. People don't want to give up too much. They don't want to yield to disruption too quickly because there's such a large revenue,
outlay
impact, you know, that they can't afford to make disruption go any faster. They've got to modulate it so they can still pay the rents and stuff.
Well, I think I even attempt to try to deal with that in the fact that I point out that we've still got pneumatics out there doing the work in the field in our buildings. We depend heavily on BACnet to do all of our moving of data around and our interoperability in the field. We basically Ethernet. We still got some old RS 485 stuff still kicking around. We've all been in this industry for a long, long time, and it's not going to change any faster. It's going to put more importance on what it is we do. I think that's it. And at the Collaboratory, I thought you were there, and George Thomas, your Hall of Famer, he stood up there and he said, I just love the enthusiasm of these kids thinking they're going to change this overnight. And they're not going to, but they are going to change it. There's no doubt about that. And I think the position or what our value is to basically determine how best we fit between the bridge of disruption and mindful and reality, you know, that damn reality keeps getting in place. So we have to figure out how we're going to do that. And as the old sages in the industry, that is our value. And so what it needs is, you have to be thinking about how you're going to set a path of a least disruptive path of how we're going to
path of least disruption. Yeah. Oh, I like that. We're going to have to put, that's going to come in there. I'm writing that.
That's very good. That's a good way of saying it. The path of least disruption. Yeah.
Good. Well, let's back up for a minute, because I think there are headwinds, and you know, Ken, we've been talking to you for years now, and there are always sort of headwinds. And Kenny sort of hit on one of the points. I mean, there's obviously the cash outlay is one of it. We've also talked about the fact that there's massive amounts of confusion. There are almost too many choices. So if you're an owner, you know, you just get analysis from paralysis, right? If it ain't broke, don't fix it. And then I think the other one is
with the technology changing so rapidly, especially with disruptive technology, it's like, you know, by the time you get the system installed or the technology installed, it might have moved on. So I see major headwinds in terms of people being reluctant to jump on the back. I'm talking about the people that are paying the bills, the owners and the users, and even the integrators. It's like, well, you're going to spend time to learn this new thing, and then it's obsolete 6 months from now, or there's something better a year from now. How do you overcome that sort of technological disruptive leapfrogging?
Well, I think that's
ennui.
I think that's exactly what the disruption is about. The disruption is moving this connection to the people piece out of our industry, and it's going into the industry, whether that be Amazon or whether that be Google or whether that be some new upstart. And that's going to happen. And what you see as you start working with the younger mentors is this doesn't scare them at all. They just basically, when they're working on something, they just grab whatever is the best solution and they let them handle that piece of it. And they do their innovation, their disruption piece that they bring back to our industry. They, in fact, may change that whole interface in 2 years from now. If Facebook falls out of favor and we stop using that, they may switch their communication app to WhatsApp. And they basically are looking at the wishes of the people, and basically, how are the people going? Are the people loving Apple today? Are they loving Android? Are they against the Chinese movement? I can never say the name of that phone, but all of that. There's all of these things pushing back and forth. We're not in those dynamics. We're just using the product of those dynamics. And I think people get scared because in the final analysis, our industry, what we do is the interface, whether we're building dashboards or graphics or that kind of stuff, is like 5% of the industry. 90% of what we do is put wires and panels and connect the big machines. And I mean, that's our business. And we kind of, because it was the fun and sexy part, we put a lot of emphasis on it. And I'm not sure we really did it well. We've got these big companies that have got like gazillions of dollars and gazillions. They have basically captured all of the new talent and they're building these interfaces. They're looking at building emotion. They're writing articles about that. They've got these people. How do people react to this new phone app? How do the people react to deviceless communication where they can just talk into midair and things happen? How can we have a better relationship with computers? They've got data scientists, psychologists, everybody working on that. And we can never match that. There's millions of man hours all occurring in that. So we have to just build on that and basically dovetail our pieces in. And I think that's our industry.
You said something very fascinating. I want to make sure I understood this. You if I understood you correctly, you said 90% of what we do, and I'm assuming the integrators and the contractors and the people, the Control Trends audience, is running wires and putting equipment in, and that's really not being affected at the rate when we're talking about disruption. You're talking about that 10%, the interfaces and how the communications and analytics. Did I understand that correctly?
I think you did. But the other exciting piece for me is as we let go of that communication piece to a certain extent, and ironically enough, we're still going to be heavily involved in that because we're going to carry out that last, it used to be the last mile, and then it was down to the last 6 inches for us with the 6-inch piece of wire that made things work or not. And now it's probably a little software program that allows us to talk to Amazon Echo or Hey Google or some other interface that of the day, basically a camera issue. But what is happening is it's making our industry a lot more visible. So my prediction is where everybody is is cowering that we're losing control of our industry. Yes, you are a bit, but you're actually opening your industry up to everybody. Everybody's going, like, I don't know, 10 years ago, you'd ride up and down in the elevator and people would ask you what you do. And I'd say, I don't know. You don't want to know. And now they're interested in what I do. And the fact that somebody is bringing an electric car to our building to bring power to our building is interesting. You can have a great discussion about that, whether it's right or wrong or where the electricity came from. All of that is so we've become socially acceptable, which I'm not so sure we ever were as an industry.
Well, Ken, and to your point, that's probably when you said that about the elevator ride, what do you do for a living? I don't know. What do you do? That was part of it. We were an unknown entity. Our whole building automation industry was an unknown entity. I mean, everybody had a very good job and worked hard and did a tremendous amount to make society what it is and to have an incredible environment. So now we're getting better. But so to putting an identity to that, all the way to Eric's friend from Atlanta that is going to the federal government to get us a code so that we can be building automation specialists or whatever. But imagine a conversation that it came out of James McHale. It says, the maturity of 5G, artificial intelligence, blockchain, augmented reality, virtual reality, voice activation, and video sensing. I mean, that is a mouthful of technology. And so you're saying one thing is that we have a future. If we could take that technology and we can link it to that 90% that we still do, then we're in the game for sure. And actually we're very needed and we don't realize it because I think the 10% is scary because it requires, that's the learning curve. That's the new technology that takes you out of your sweet spot and makes you move laterally to maybe IT or some new channel that you weren't familiar with. So if I hear you correctly, we've got a great future ahead of us and it's going to be good for everybody.
I very much believe that. The other thing is just exposing all of the buildings that you guys know that haven't been upgraded yet. So once the CEO and the CTO start looking with this stuff, where they basically start using these analytics to change their bottom line as they're forced by the utility company to do demand control, all of a sudden those buildings are not going to be allowed to exist. This is as totally as significant as the DDC revolution was to pneumatics. I mean, it basically, we couldn't afford to maintain those pneumatic systems because the DDC systems became much more reliable. They were much more accurate. They gave us a bunch more data. We could actually see what was used to be a bale of pneumatic tubing. We actually put into lines of code so we could actually have people who just came into the site read the code and figure out what was going on. It was just that kind of a transition. This is almost the same transition. Also, the other thing that happened during that time is the DDC systems actually brought out a whole bunch of problems of things that didn't work in the buildings. And that was one of the biggest assets they provided to owners. This is just the next level, the next peel of the onion. And basically what's happening now is it's going to be on their phone and they're going to say, what's wrong with building C? And you're going to answer, building C doesn't have the level of automation as A and B. Would you like me to do that? And yes, I would like you to do that. And so I think it's going to bring up all those chinks we've had in our armor forever and try and get a lot of that stuff. We've also got a great opportunity to bring, like, the DDC systems are dinosaurs now. I mean, most of those DDC systems are 20 years old. And in the world of IT, the rule is that basically it evolves four times what normal. So you can imagine that those 20-year-old DDC systems look like 80-year-old building bits. So if you kind of view them in that point of view, then that stuff has to be brought forward, or if the economics aren't there and it was lucky enough to make it into the BACnet or Modbus or some kind of a standard that we can grab, we can actually just plug into it. And what is totally amazing is that stuff is still running.
Well, listen, I got to hop in and summarize some things that I'm hearing for our Controls Trends Network, because I thought this was going to be more of a gloom and doom type conversation with the age of disruption. But what the takeaway I'm hearing is, hey, the good news for you folks that are doing the 90% of the stuff in the building is these 10% disruptors are coming in, and they're actually going to be like salespeople. They're going to be baking the pie and making the pie much bigger, to the point that the CEO is going to go, well, I can do all this other stuff with my iPhone or whatever. How do I get my building automation connected to it, which is going to create opportunities, right? So the pie is going to get bigger. And it sounds like the takeaway for our folks is you don't necessarily have to be the best IT person or figure all this other stuff out. You don't want to compete on the 10% of that business. You want to enable that 10% because that's going to pull business through for you, correct?
Well, I think what's going to happen is they're going to ask, how the heck do I get more information from this chiller? How the heck? Because once they see that data and how useful that data is, I mean, all of their artificial intelligence, their self-learning is based on gathering real-time data. And in fact, there will be new ways of doing that, and there will be new products evolving. One of our articles is Disruption from Australia, and he's talking about the LoRa, and I'm not sure if that's how you pronounce it, LoRa, LoRa. It's basically a wireless standard. And that was another takeaway that I took away from AHR, was the whole idea that in some cases, we would actually install our own communication network. That was like a big thought. And it was, some of the folks are actually doing that. It came out in two flavors. It came out when they were actually setting up all their VAV boxes in a large building, and the Ethernet had not been strung around the building yet. They actually set up a guerrilla Wi-Fi system and basically set up all their boxes and balancing and stuff. And then they took it away. And in some buildings, they didn't take it away. They actually left it in. And then this LoRa, what it is it's a completely different frequency that is different than cell and stuff. And it allows you to actually set up your own guerrilla wireless network. So we're starting to see that'll be another flavor of how this all will happen. Another disruption. It's just like, you're doing what? So there's just a lot of pieces moving. And as always in our industry, there's pockets. I always love our industry because everybody's doing so well and they actually believe they've captured the market. What is really happening is the market is so big, they found a piece of the market that makes them very happy, and they're doing very well. But everybody's doing very well, and they seldom even run into each other because they've got a little twist on how they do the industry and keeps on working. I think that's going to expand even further.
Well, the takeaway I have, Ken, and this is where you do such a great job, and we aspire to do a good job, is that, as one of my teachers once said, nothing is obvious to the uninformed. And I think one of the takeaways is you don't have to be a genius at all this stuff, but you better understand the technologies and the ramifications they might have. So when you're talking to one of your customers and they come in and start talking some of this stuff, like, I want a LoRa or whatever in their building, at least you know what they're talking about. Otherwise, they're going to go to somebody who's more informed, would be my guess.
Yes, I think so. I think we need to know the buzzwords that are being thrown around. And I think the other thing we have to do is, when they say that buzzword, what is our deliverable? Our deliverable is to provide more, more information. What kind of stuff can we grab wirelessly? What stuff is not practical to grab wirelessly? Where are our communication points? I think we're basically an industry that is going to take real hard things like chillers, pumps, VAV boxes, and we're going to communicate with them. The other movement we've got going in that area, of course, is the lighting folks are now starting to put this stuff in theirs. So I think more and more we're going to be doing that last end connection. but the more and more the OEMs are going to be starting to put bigger pieces of this, but there's still a large integration. I think the numbers are going to be greater. Like where there was a reluctance to put this stuff in, we're starting to see motivation. The utility article is amazing motivation. The fact that we're very quickly going to be into time of day billing, and the building has to respond to the grid. Because if it doesn't respond to the grid, we're going to run out of power if we just go blindlessly like we did. So that means the building has to be interactive, and that's a lot of controls.
Well, listen, I know Kenny wants to do a deep dive on that, and I do too. But before we do that, there's a thread I don't want to lose. And for our community, he might not know. I mean, Ken spent many, many years essentially as a contractor working with Johnson Controls. So specifically, I want to take away for our community, because most of them have customers, whether they're a consulting engineer, whether they're a systems integrator, whether they're, you know, a service contractor. So I want to put you in that role. If you're a contractor today, you own a contracting business, and me and Kenny work for you and the rest of your team, what are you telling us, based on what you know now, what are you telling us to do in terms of communicating with our customers, or give me three or four steps that you would have your people do it?
Okay, let me just clarify my involvement with Johnson. When I was there, I was actually a service sales manager, so I was not in, not didn't do any contracting of that type. I was on the service side of the business. Okay. And then when I left there, I worked for a developer looking after buildings, and then after that, worked as the assistant energy analyst for the province of Alberta, and then I started my consulting firm. And basically, the bulk of my experience that I relate in automated buildings is from being a automation energy consultant in Western Canada. So anyway, I can answer it from that point of view, which will probably be, you'll frame it a little bit better.
Well, just pretend like you own a big service. Kenny and I pretend like we're controls guys every day. It's not that hard. So just pretend like you own a controls company or a service. And what, you know, based on what you know, what's your messaging to your folks?
Look at the change. Look at the disruptions that are occurring through the eyes of your younger mentors. And if you don't have younger mentors, you're in big trouble, because you definitely need to see this through their eyes, through the digital natives that have grown up in this. You have to see how they piece together all of these software pieces. I think what the trouble is we're trying to get in between this stuff. And you see a company like Uber, look at how Uber built that. They built it on Google Maps. It's a bunch of pieces. Everything they build today is a bunch of pieces. And nobody actually owns those pieces. They use them because they're available. People know how to use it. If you use Google Maps if you use Google Maps to guide people, wayfind your way through your building, people know how that works. And they say, oh, that's good. Everybody, all of a sudden, I have 100 million people that know how this works. And we're trying to invent our own interface for some of this. I mean, get real. We have to kind of move and take those pieces and focus back on what we do is connect that way, doing something with what wayfinding, like once the wayfinding is done, what's the result of that? You're going to have to add more relays to shut off more lighting or dim it, or you're going to have window controls. There's just the myriad of things that are going to get connected to our industry is just doubling, tripling.
So that's it. Here we go again with our theme, take the path of least disruption. And you know, what's really cool about this is, and I wanted to, before I forget, Nicholas, who also has a nice post on this edition, when he stood up, or when Brad White and Nicholas Warren stood up and presented their vision of the future, and they talked about, you know, all the IoT things coming on online and how technology, it wasn't a question of if it was going to, you know, be implemented and deployed. It was a question of when. And some of the the headwinds and some of the slowness of our world to adapt to this when you said Uber and the pieces of technology, I think that is a great analogy of what's going on in this, with our building automation, is we're taking bits and pieces that used to come to us as individual applications. And instead of, one manufacturer trying to drive that whole way through and take 5 or 6 years or 4 or 5 years to deploy it, we saw the collaboration take place and how these pieces came together like a puzzle in that collaboratorium. To this addition, again, is incredible that the utility rates and tariffs, you talk about, pieces of a puzzle coming together. You've got an expert on the energy, the industry itself. You've got another expert on rate activity, and how, that's so, volatile. And then you have John Petsy, a Sky Foundry, who creates a tariff application, basically using the data that it's available and tie it all together. And you've got yourself an incredible, potent, solution to deal with what you said. We are peaker, the people that generate energy are being reduced. We're not building any new power plants. In fact, and we're going to mothball some of the older ones that are less, that are a problem with our pollution, or whatever. So we have to have a grid that has to be connected. And so the solution, the government first came out and did the smart grid and paid a lot of money and then turned it over to a private sector and let the private sector try to drive this, get it done. We're seeing it happen in our building automation. So I get a kick out of the things that you're saying, but this addition you have, not only you talk about disruption, all the things, and then we have to build a bridge and we have to take our own journey, our own path. But now we're actually seeing the manifestation of this disruption coming together as a very cohesive puzzle built out of individual components of technology, and it is going to be the solution. So, I mean, and then what I meant by Nicholas is that he stood up against some of the old timers that said, you know what, we don't make any money using your new models. We can't have open software and open systems and free technology and free whatever, because this freeware basically undermines and disrupts our business models. So it's an enormous concept, but it's coming together.
I heard that exact same argument when, as a younger lad, I was the bright consultant that was the blasphemy of DDC, and I was basically crushing their pneumatic systems. And this new these new electronic DDC systems would never see the light of day. They would never carry through. And basically, the maintenance, we will lose our maintenance contracts and blah blah blah. And as a Johnson Service salesman, I understood the makeup of a Johnson Service contract pretty well. So there was an actual exact same thing, and this is exactly the same thing, but what happened to the DDC industry is look at all the industries it created. I suspect the DDC industry didn't hurt either one of your companies. It actually embellished it in an amazing way. I believe this disruption will do exactly the same thing. It is going to grow our industry beyond belief and drag us out of the mechanical rooms. And we now are visible. We're virtually visible everywhere, and we're going to enter into the main data, and people will be interacting with some of our pieces via phones, and that just means a whole lot of connections. And we're in the connection industry, as we tried to do with the connection collaboratory.
Well, we are, Ken, and I want to cycle back around. I didn't quite get to finish my thought. Permission to address your company. You've got a company meeting and all your folks are there. And what I would tell them and what I would tell our community is that the most precious thing you have is customers and access to your customers. Okay. So understanding this and being brilliant at it, but not knowing anybody or not having any connections doesn't do you any good. So if you're going to participate in this, I think, a part of your strategy has to be, how are we going to stay close to our customers? How are we going to educate them to these changes? Because somebody's going to educate them. And I think that's got to be a key part of your strategy, whether you're a consulting engineer, whether you're a contractor, or even if you're an owner.
Again, I go back to my roots in the DDC industry. We had to basically create the industry and create the players. And in Western Canada, that was the evolution of local companies such as Reliable Controls and Delta Controls were our leading companies that basically rose to engage and provide these new kinds of systems. And these new kinds of systems we would have never been able to create without the disruption we caused with the DDC industry and against the majors who wanted to still put in pneumatic systems. So we're sort of in the same situation now. They've moved on. They basically have embraced DDC. They've also embraced BACnet and a few other things, but they still have control of their campuses and their hospitals, and they don't want to let go. And the innovation, that is innovation layer, the disruption layer, is aching at them, and it's trying to take it apart. So the way our industry works is this isn't going to take, what I'm talking about isn't going to be mainstream this year, next year, or probably in the next 4 or 5 years, although it's moving much faster than it normally does. It's going to change, and what it'll do is there'll be a few owners that completely think out of the box, and they're all about how their people feel. They're letting the buildings being driven by their people, and their people are disruptive by nature because they look at everything on their phone, they order their groceries, they talk their grocery lists, they don't write. This is the category of people. They're also trying to attract more of these people to their buildings, so they want their buildings to be leading edge. And so these leading edge buildings will change the world. And basically it's just for the folks to watch what is done, how that is done, and what is traditional control and what is just a head shake from what we're doing, completely different way of doing it. And I'm really looking forward to the Star Trekker there, Scotty Cochran. And
Controls Cochran.
Pardon?
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, I was anticipating you're looking forward to the ControlCon event.
The beam me up, Scotty, because he's in the middle of exactly the same dilemma, leading a whole bunch of systems integrators that are doing this, and now the systems integrators are being asked to bring the DC cars, the electric vehicles, into the building. They're now they've got to wrestle with this storage and dynamic interaction with the utilities. Now we've got to deal with people. There was a great article I linked to there from had anything to do with automated buildings, but at the University of Southern California, how to improve communications between people and smart buildings. And they found computer-generated avatars and chatbots and stuff like that are a useful piece in our buildings. I mean, This is just a complete another disrupting thought to us. Is we're struggling as to how do we get that feedback back from the people, and the universities and the researchers are basically digging into that. So that's an interesting side of the equation. So there's so many moving pieces, but ironically enough, I don't think our pieces are moving all that much. Eventually, we're still going to have chillers, we're still going to have fans, we're still going to have boxes, we're still going to have lights. We are getting some new things. Another one I saw at AHR, the tunable glass. The tunable glass guy was in every one of our sessions. I found that interesting.
What is tunable glass, Ken?
Basically, glass that you change the shading on. Did you see that? I had to actually get up and turn my light shade there because I was looking like a zebra, so I wanted to be less zebra-like. So I turned my shade a bit, and I actually had to get out of my chair, whereas I should have been able to just touch my phone here and do that. So that, but tunable glass in a high rise is huge because it has to do with the solar load. It has to do with human comfort, how we're going to control that. That's another controller. There's going to be a controller on the windows, just like there is on the boxes. So you got all these new control systems coming. I mean, how is that going to come? In some ways, it'll be molded a bit into the glass. We're going to see more of the controls kind of moving out of our panels and into the pieces, but they're still going to have to be all connected, brought back to some kind of a communication standard so the disruption can occur.
All right, so there you go. That's Kent Sinclair, automatedbuildings.com. The February issue is out and online at automatedbuildings.com. If you haven't already, be sure to check it out. Ken, thanks so much for taking some time to be on with us today.
Thanks a lot, Ken.
Okay.
Till next month.
Thanks, guys.
All right. And Kenny, as usual, Ken Sinclair, spot on. Love what he had to say.
Well, yeah, and I really like the comments he made about how the broadening of his readership and viewership is going into the IT world, and how it's almost exponential growth, and that's good for our industry, and it's good for us all, because now we're going to be included in, you know, they're looking at our industry and they want to marry up with it, and we need to look at their industries and marry up with it. Some of the great articles that we discussed, you know, about, but you know, what the rules are, who, what we've got to do to be able to sustain ourselves as a business, both individually and as a whole, is to get, you know, kind of smarter and make those issues yours, you know, adopt them.
It sounds to me like, you know, the good news is that there's going to be a lot more opportunities created, and it sounds like they're going to need us as much as we need them, and they're only playing for 10%, according to Ken. So as we continue with the theme of disruption, and disruption calls in all shapes, sizes, and forms, because normally when you think of somebody disruptive, you think of some wild person like you or your brothers, Tommy or Dave.
Hey.
Our next guest, is probably the nicest guy in the industry, but he's also the most disruptive. So how about introducing him and let's hear what he's up to in the world of disruption.
I'd love to, Eric. Disruption, but this is the good stuff. This isn't bad disruption. This is good disruption. This is, we'd like to introduce Albert Olsmesler. He is the CEO of BASSG and Anka Labs with his favorite passion, Project Sandstar. And we're going to be talking about some of the great analytics. Albert's a master of a variety of building automation specialties and systems, and welcome to the show, Alper.
Welcome, Alper.
Thank you for having me.
All right, now listen, before we get started, now as a child, were you kind of the child that was always getting in trouble for, like, you know, mixing chemicals in the bathroom or setting the house on fire and like all these great innovators, or were you considered disruptive as a child?
No.
No. So you say
I was very calm. I was very calm.
Well, but let's talk a little bit about disruption in the industry and BAS, because you've been around the game for a while, and it's not that things haven't changed in the past, but it seems like we are hitting warp speed. So what do you see in terms of disruption in the BAS industry, the smart building controls industry? And then talk about how you're trying to disrupt it after what you're, tell us what you're seeing.
Yeah, I mean, the way I see the controls industry, it is a dinosaur moving industry. It's very similar to the grid industry, where new technology adoption is very slow and change is happening slow. But there are other forces around us that is forcing us to push forward, like this, you know, deep learning, artificial intelligence, analytics. These things are catching up to us, and I do see that there is a need for change and also a need for a new understanding of working together in an open source manner. That will be the hardest challenge, I think.
Well, I'm sorry. Go ahead. Albert, I just want to begin, you know, and say that you've always espoused the open stuff, open protocols, open system, open source. You know, do you think that our industry is going to ever achieve that, or do you think that the impulse to have a proprietary source of revenue, you know, monetary investments, everything. Do you think that in this disruption theme that, you know, we will move one day to a fully open system, open protocol, open source?
It will happen. The question is when, right? There is money out there. The buildings use 40 plus of the energy consumed within the US. There is resources there, but the minds have to shift to on how to come up together. The big companies are actually the culprit of not getting us there. And I do believe the open source will win eventually, so that we have more open and more interconnected buildings to save energy. And also the demand side from the grid is coming as well, because the grid is changing, and the buildings need to be able to talk to the grid for its demands as well. So there will be more forces coming aligned for having open source to win, but it's a matter of when. And it's also open source is a community effort. It's not one company can achieve it. It is the community will have to come together. So within our model, the controls engine is completely open source. So because of that, and the way we built it is based on Haystack tags. So the ultimate benefit of it is that you can have portable DDC code between manufacturers. So for the owner's perspective, the engineering time will be less, because they can port different code between different devices, regardless of what that device is or what the device they used is. On top of it, the analytics engine is built in, and it's all based on the same tags. So the value generation, the engineering of the system is the time that it takes is a lot less than others, because there's no human intervention is needed other than the initial time when you program the controller. Then you have analytics results coming out of the device. Think of your car and dashboard. Your car has a small chip that checks your oil status, it checks your tire pressure. It tells you right at the within the car. It's not calculated outside of the car and reported to you. So these controllers basically do that. They have the analytics built in, and it has other tools that we are working on to make it easier for you to access remotely. So the benefit of having a tag-based model analytics engine built in on a controls logic is beneficial for the owner in multiple amplitudes.
All right, no, it makes a lot of sense. So you're saying, if I understand correctly, what you're saying is your controllers sort of connect existing controllers together so that they can share data via the controllers. You're not replacing, say, a VAV controller necessarily.
Actually, you are. Yeah,
you are.
Actually, okay. You are. This is a new model of controls, where the historical database is in the controller. The analytic, the controls engine is an open source controls engine, which is portable between the same controls engines. So anyone actually can come up with a controller with the open source control engine that we have written. And then you can-
You need to take us slowly to how these control engines are inside the applications that you have, but then also the controllers. If you have an example of that, this would be an ideal time.
Yeah, that would be great.
Okay. Well, while you're setting it up, I want to ask a question. Hopefully you can multitask here. So are you saying that this software code that, let's say I've got a Johnson VAV controller, that can be put in my Johnson VAV controller to do that, or do I have to replace the Johnson VAV controller?
You will have to replace. There's new era of controllers. If you think of the phones, we had phones, mobile phones, and it didn't have a screen. Think of the existing control systems are within that technology. They are microcontrollers built into them. There are microprocessors that are actually now cheaper than microcontrollers, the gap of price has come so much down. And the benefit we get out of them is a lot more, so that you could actually utilize these now. So, and if you look at the smartphone industry, they build billions of smartphones every year to the masses, and the adoption rate is a lot higher. So I will basically explain what Project Senstar is. Project Senstar is a working group under Project Haystack. So if you go to working group and invitation to Project Senstar, it is basically a working group. You can come in and join to the working group. On Bitbucket, we do have the open source files here, so you can go ahead and download and install it. If you go to Senstar, you will see it right here. We do have the open source code within the system. So what is Project Senstar? Is basically, it is it merges Haystack with Sedona framework. And the way it merges it is it creates hardware agnostic DDC. So what do we mean by hardware agnostic? What it is that when we go to an analog input, the analog input currently, when we generate an analog input, it basically has analog input 1 or 2 or some number that we hard code the logic engine code within the DDC. But within our case, within Senstar, what we have is within the block, we write the tags that what it means. So in this case, we have a zone air temp sensor, and it's reading the zone temperature within the area. It's actually hooked up to the controller that you see at the bottom left corner right now. The way it works is a couple abstractions going on underneath it, and I will explain you that abstraction part of it. The first abstraction is called a device template. A device template within these controllers, if you look at these controllers, like a controller like this, this is a BeagleBone, and the ports that are on here are jumper 8s, and these are jumper 9s. And we are basically hard coding that number to a Haystack tag called channel. So a Haystack tag called channel is 4 equals to one of these jumpers here that is hard coded by us. So we are abstracting the physical hardware to a Haystack tag called channel. Then we create for the whole device, we create something called, again, this is based on Haystack. It's a Zinc file format. Zinc is not a CSV. This is what the Franks came out with as a joke. And this is basically a table. If you want to understand what this table is, I can make a data call to the Senstar. I will make that call really quick. Haystack read all. And I will do read haystack.con. So I'm just making a data call to the Haystack device and reading the table that I have actually generated. And you can see the channels. The channels 4 through 57 are actually the physical I/O that we have defined within the controller. So the only active ports within that controller are defined with Haystack tags. Of course, this is like really impossible to add these tags from here. It would take so much time. So what we have built is we have built a tooling called Record Editor. What Record Editor does is it defines the ports of a controller so that we can easily understand what it is doing and why it is doing it. So if you look at a return air temperature, let's take a look at the zone air temperature sensor that we have here. We have defined it. We have videos on these. So you can actually define your channel 4, and then you add tags like thermistor 10K, and you add your linear conversion tags. And these are already built into the library. So you can see thermistor 10K requires these tags. So by the time it gets to the logic, to the Sedona logic engine, It is already tagged, so we consume 76.17 within the logic engine. everything is done based, abstraction is done based on tags as well. Because this is using Haystack, from the logic engine, the Sedona, SandStar engine, to the Sedona layer, there's a horizontal communication going on within the Linux level. And then there is northbound communication going from the engine to the REST API. And the REST API is the Haystack API. So we don't have to, the device becomes self-descriptive at that point. And now this is what you're seeing. You're seeing the points that are within a device with Haystack model. So if you go to the device, it would actually say, I have these points defined in me. And it will give you what the data it has, and then you can write to it, and you can read historical data as well.
What's that's pretty awesome stuff, Alper. Again, you're moving at a very good rate. I have some knowledge of these, what you're handling here, but I think the demonstration is it's awesome because to me you've got a working model. So this is no longer a work in progress. This is available, and this is communal effort. This collaboration could accelerate these possible choices for our building automation world. But like Eric's question was that in your reference to the phones, that the only really way to get to the newest technologies is to abandon your old phone and get the new phone that has the iPhone capability. We got the camera, the microphone, the screens and everything. But it's what you're showing us here, I think we could also go back and leverage this technology with existing VAV controllers, couldn't we? Couldn't you use the Project Haystack concept and tagging with existing components and bring them into this application?
You could do it in a scaled way, right? You could get your air handling units first, upgrade those to an edge analytics controller or any controller that will use SandStar.
Mm-hmm. Okay,
could do that.
Real quick, Alper, how many choices do I have right now? How many controllers use SandStar right now?
We have hooked up the controller that you see in there. That's one. Right. We are hooking up another one with a Raspberry Pi from a company called Six Fabs. And we are basically hooking up more and more controllers, but we just need to get more devices out there with this kind of Raspberry Pi, BeagleBone, or any other company that builds it, we are willing to work with them.
But to Kenny's point, because this is really, really cool, but to Kenny's point, if I've got I'm a property manager and I got buildings full of existing controls, my option to adopt this technology at the present point is to change the controllers out.
Okay. That is correct.
Gotcha. So are any chance any of the majors might adopt this technology? It seems like it'd be a great opportunity for one of the majors to drop in and put this in to their control. I mean, could they backward compatible this? In other words,
around the Haystack part of SandStar, you could add a backnet, and it would be a backnet IP device. So it would be a part of a backnet IP. If they add backnet MSDP around Haystack, it would be a backnet MSDP device. Sure. So yes, you could access data through the MSDP. It would be a part of the MSDP network, but it would have Wi-Fi or other means to get the analytics data out. So it is possible to do both.
Okay, but it seems like what would be really ideal is if all the major control companies, I guess here's a question. So I'm a major controls manufacturer and I go, Alper, I think this is a great idea. I got an install base of 40 million controls. I want to adopt this technology in the existing controllers. There's no way we could just go in and download those to our existing controllers.
No, it's because the existing controllers are using microcontrollers and they don't have the space or the bandwidth to do such a thing. But there are other chips, system on a chip. What it means is that they condensed the whole system. They condensed this whole system into a single chip that is a quarter size is available right now. And they could come up with a new hardware and then bring the old to the new if they want.
So in other words, what you're saying, if I understood this correctly, Alper, is that you could initiate some of the Project SandStar in almost any building, if the equipment, you instead of going down to the controller level and try to, you know, because you can't do it because it doesn't have the microchip in there, or the system on a yeah. disk or whatever, or chip, a system on a chip, but you could go to the air handler, and then you could take Project mm-hmm. Sandstar, and you could apply it to a piece of equipment, mm-hmm. not necessarily the controls. So that you can implement the benefits. In other words, I have a nagging question already, and so the whole end game here that we're trying to get to is the data, and to Eric's point, you know, we had just gone through a very, very good dose of what data can do with analytics, and how that data and analytics is so critical now when you go to the grids, and we talked about some of the interesting things with utilities and energies, and some of the things that John Petsy and his team have done, and how that's now going into, you know, areas of Constellation Energy where they can actually save extraordinary amounts of money, prevent peak demand, and then we saw, you know, from Ken St. Clair saying where these cars can actually charge a building, go out there and collect energy, and then hook it up to the building for emergencies and actually give power to the building. So this disruption is crazily, you know, it's like Ken St. Clair's theme was, you know, we've got to build gentle bridges to get, you know, to conceive this, but actually to deploy it. Is this, so we have to help you when you're going through all these capabilities, try to give us, like you were doing with those analogies of the car and the dashboard, where a typical building owner, because when we have end this conversation and the Control Trends community watches this, we need to give them first steps. We need to say, if you're really interested in this, contact Alper, join Project Haystack, join Project Sandstar, and then here's how long it'll take you to start deriving benefits.
Yeah, that is the start. Also look at the use cases that we came up with and what we had done. So what you're seeing on the screen is a rooftop unit controller. Mm-hmm. This is one of our first pilot. It's controlling a rooftop unit with four compressors in it. The top left corner is the historical data that is coming from the controller. The bottom left corner is the number of nodes that are open within the controller. Just like this is the rooftop controller where it has the graphic, it has the historical data, and the top right corner is your sparks that are generated right within the controller itself. So this is a different way of looking at it. When you go to the controller, you have everything in it. Everything from analytics to visualization to historical data to the sparks is wow. right within there.
That's pretty cool.
Very cool, Alper. Very cool.
Okay. Yeah. I wanted to show you something on for the VAV boxes, right? So we did integrate a I2C sensor that is open source. It's in the community edition. The way it works is I will show it to you really quick. I will open up my Dyson. This is my IoT, this is my IoT demonstration cast. This is basically how I check my airflow sensor. So I can actually turn the fan on the controller, and you will be able to see right in here, the airflow should change within the device. Actually, it is not changing because as you can see,
it changed.
It's changing.
No, it's not. Hold on.
The value's changing.
As you can see, it is unplugged. So.
Oh, so it's negative. I see. No, okay. I got you.
All right. So you can see that we can actually turn things on or off and test. And this is basically done all with Haystack tags. So if you look at the point of the CFM, this is literally abstracted based on tags. So we are reading an I2C sensor with Haystack and passing it to Sedona layer just by defining these with tags. So this is a new way of looking at things. Also, we mentioned earlier about looking at data through mobile app. Because this is all Haystack based, we did write an app called Mobilitic, and you can see Carytown Gaithersburg. This is just a demo. And you can go to RTU1, and this is because of Haystack Tagged. You can actually see all your data right from here. You can see notes, if this thing has notes, within that device. You can see your actions. If there's Sparks, it will filter it. You can see Sparks, which is analytics results within your whole site or within just an individual device.
That's so cool, Albert. Very cool.
Yeah. So the benefits of doing everything.
Moved up and onward in the industry. So keep up the good work, Albert.
Yeah, keep up the good work. And listen, real quick, one of our community is asking, where did you get the picture of Kenny back on that graphic when he was going through his Dr. Zhivago stage? What's the gateway website for you to go through? I mean, I know you've got three different companies. Is there, what website should our community start with?
If they want to learn about Senstar, go to onkalabs.com, onkalabs.com. If you want to learn about our Tridium and SkySpark services, it is BASSG.com.
Very cool. Albert, man, thank you so much for taking time to be with us. We appreciate you, brother. Thank you for tuning in. Have a great week. Be bold, stay in control, and do something disruptive this week.
Indeed, Eric.